Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sherrod Kutun.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, Malaysia has one of the highest rates of urbanization in Asia. Today, more than 75% of Malaysians live in towns or cities. And with the rapid pace of urbanization comes new challenges. So in hopes of addressing some of these challenges and in bridging the gaps in public policy, Think City initiated an urban policy series on the multiple dimensions of urban transformation. One of the issues highlighted in their policy note was on the administration and management of public housing in Malaysia, particularly high-rise, low-cost housing like PPAs, or Program Perumahan Awam, or PPRs, Program Perumahan Rakyat. Now, joining us on the show to share a little bit more about the issue and also the policy recommendations that you wrote in this policy note, we have the author of the policy note, Badrul Hisham Ismail. He's the director of programs at the think tank Iman Research. Badrul, hi, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. I want
Thank
to begin
you.
Before we kind of delve into the policy note and the issues that you found and you highlighted in it, can we just set the scene a little bit about public housing in Malaysia? Maybe you can tell us, for those who may not know, what does public housing in Malaysia look like? Who's living in public housing in Malaysia?
Okay, so public housing has been around in Malaysia, even pre-independence, actually. But the sort of the period where the effort to build public housing more rapidly really happened during the 60s, which coincide with the rapid rural to urban migration that has happened in the country. And it has gone through multiple phases, which tends to relate to the Malaysia plan of whichever period that it is. And it is never a policy that works in silo. It's a policy that is sort of part of the bigger economic and development policy that the country has. And it has gone through quite a few multiple phases. But in general, the public housing in Malaysia are catered to the urban poor who are unable to afford housing that are provided through the market with market price. And there are multiple schemes and there are ways to apply, and there are exclusion and inclusion criteria for all the different types of public housing that we have had over the past few decades.
Badrul, you know, I grew up in Singapore and, you know, I was surrounded by public housing, but it's run by the state and the Housing and Development Board, Singapore HDB, provides some 80% of housing for the population. And it's often seen as a huge success internationally. I wonder about the question of who provides public housing in this country and whether that in some ways contributes to some of the problems we see in public housing in Malaysia.
Well, first of all, Singapore is a very unique case where the government takes full charge of housing of the people. Which not many countries actually have that kind of policy. But going back to Malaysia, I think one of the earliest public housing was a program that sort of spearheaded by the federal government. But over the years, there are a few programs that some are still run by the federal government, but they are the ones that are then sort of run and managed by state government as well. And interestingly, there was a period of time where actually the private developers were asked to sort of take charge of not only building but also maintaining a few public housing, which happened, I think, during the 80s to mid-90s, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, let's come to your policy note, which was that had, interviews with residents of low-cost public housing complexes. And, you know, I wanted, perhaps you can give us an overview of why this policy note was important, why it was important to look at the lived realities of those living in public housing complexes.
Well, I think in recent years there's been a few studies that sort of surface to sort of show and highlight the kind of living condition that the urban poor are going through, specifically in the public housing complexes. And I think from the Think City perspective, during the pandemic, they began a long-term sort of relationship with the public housing communities all over the country, actually, not just in KL and Selangor, but also in states like Penang and Johor, and even in Sarawak, in Kuching, which initially, if I'm not mistaken, is basically sort of an aid distribution program that they started. But it sort of opened their eyes into the condition of these public housing complexes, which sort of led them to have a more than just aid distribution program or community program, but also to really look into the matter of what has led to the current condition of the public housing in Malaysia, which is not necessarily the best place to live at, unfortunately.
But Bandrul, kind of following on the question I asked you about, who provides and manages these public housing programs, you seem to be suggesting that it's a kind of patchwork and a patchwork that's grown over the decades. Does that impact the quality and the livability of these buildings and schemes? So is there a difference between federal-run programs, state-run programs, and those that came under schemes that roped in private developers in order to build low-cost schemes? Is there a discernible difference between those three types of public housing schemes?
Oh, I at the moment I don't see any real differences in terms of the mechanism behind it. It's the differences is more about who are the ones responsible to build and maintain and continue the upkeep of those buildings. As far as I know, the funding still majority still comes from the federal government, even though certain complexes are run by the state. So the funding still come from the federal government through the state government. So there's not much difference in that sense in terms of is there a difference between the state or the federal ones? There are little differences here and there, but the condition and the demographic of target group that they are intended to are pretty much the same, and the issues that are being dealt with the residents in either state-run or federal-run public housing complexes are still also pretty much the same.
You said a little bit earlier that the question is what has led to this, to the conditions of public housing at the moment, which we know are in dire straits and dire conditions, right? You painted a picture in the policy notes, and you talked about flooding on the 12th floor, about rain coming in through windows and having the need to put plastic up to stop rain coming in, to stop flooding from happening, because residents were unable to put up awnings because management wouldn't allow them to. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the inability of residents of public housing to be able to have any kind of control or autonomy of their environment, leading to, because of the governance of the governance structure of Malaysia's public housing?
I think one of the underlying issue when it comes to these complexes is that the idea that these are just a temporary help for a specific group of people for a temporary period of time. A lot of the public housing complexes were built for people who, well, at least at the time, were viewed to supposed to go up the social ladder, meaning that they stay at that time because that's the only places that they can afford. But over the years, hopefully they are able to have a better livelihood and move out of those places. So that, from what I understand, is one of the reason why the idea that it's a transitional housing program that led to not putting more effort in terms of
Was
the
that the
funding.
case? Was that the case, though, Badrul? I mean, did you find that residents of public housing were in fact transitional, that they didn't stay there long, or had they been there for longer than expected periods of time?
Actually, most of the ones that we've met have been living there for quite a period of time, and there have not been any real sort of going th up through the ladder where they are able to move out of those complexes. And even if they do, it'll be the next generation, their children. But the parents still live there, and they have no plans to actually move out. So that made the whole idea of the design and the funding is more of a not really thought to be something that is for the long term, which led to sort of very minimal design, minimal maintenance, minimal funding that led to all those issues that we sort of talk about in the paper.
Yeah, but I like Melissa. I was struck by that example of the an apartment so badly designed that it will allow water to come in during a rainstorm. And I wonder if you had a chance to speak to architects, because I would put much of this on the shoulders of a poor, not, just not poor design, indifferent design. I mean, public housing in Malaysia is hideous, and it's hideous, and that the it's so ugly that it must affect how people relate to each other, how community can be formed or cannot be formed, just the livability of some of these spaces that look more like chicken pens stacked up, one on top of another. And you point to some of the things. I mean, this idea that people are temporary, but even if people are temporary and they expect others to move in, the sheer indifference in terms of design is shocking, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yes. It seems that I personally haven't been able to talk to anyone who were involved in the design of the
I think
building.
it'd be a shame to talk to you.
Well, I would like to, and even the, besides the architect, also the developers themselves who are given those sort of projects to build. But unfortunately, yes, like you said, they haven't been well thought of in terms of how it would actually. How people would actually live in those spaces. It's really just giving walls and a roof to the community.
Understood. But we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Consider This. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sherrod Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with the Director of Programs for Iman Research, Badrul Hisham Ismail. He wrote a policy note for Think City on the administration and management of public housing in Malaysia, specifically high-rise, low-cost housing complex, for instance, like the PPRs and the PPAs, Program Perumahan Awam, Program Perumahan Rakyat. I want to come back to the policy note that you wrote, Badrul, and, wanting to look at specifically the impact of the pandemic and the lockdown for residents of public housing. Because, as we know, issues around public housing have been around for many years. It's been brought up repeatedly by people like yourself, but the issues have been exacerbated by the pandemic and the lockdown and the cramped quarters and the facilities breaking down has been, I guess, made more, the deprivations have been made more obvious because of it. And I'm just wondering what have been some of the findings of the policy and the policy notes and recommendations for it to be addressed.
Well, clearly, when it comes to the lockdown, there haven't really been any thought how it would actually affect the most vulnerable group of the population, which is very clear after more than a year of this. Then we can really saw what are the effects that People not being able to work, not even able to just go outside of their house, and how it affects different people differently. Asking about how we can change it, it's really, giving more voice to the people, to voice out how these SOPs or these policies are going to affect them, and instead of looking at the entire population as a blanket, one type of, household, but, different people will have different needs. And these policies, however good intention they are, would have different impacts. And we always need to consider how different people are experiencing it.
Bajo, could you help us just give us some details about how a typical kind of person living in one of these public houses, how do they and who do they relate to? I mean, what are the authority structures like? Are they amenable to feedback from residents? Can residents take charge of certain decision-making processes? What's going on in a typical public housing project?
Well, first of all, one thing that I was sort of saw the difference between a public housing complex and a private condominium, for example, is the absence of something that is called JMB, the Joint Management Body, that they have it in private condominium where this is where residents are able to be part of the management and having a say and having a discussion among the residents themselves to whether to improve or to solve certain issues or to have a say in how the complex are managed. And this is absent in the public housing complex, which basically put the management, which either the state government or the municipality or even the federal government have 100% say of how things are going to be managed and how things are running in the complexes.
Right. On that note, I mean, there was one part where you pointed out that some of the residents had this immense sense of fear to the people, the management, the people who manage or decide who get to live there, fear of eviction, not just because of perhaps missed payments or missed rent or late rent, but because they have so much say about who gets to live in these public housing complexes that you don't want to offend anyone. You actually would need to, in fact, in another term, to be nice to them, to suck up to them, to ensure that you get a place to stay, a roof over your head.
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, those incidents happen. And it really depends on the management body itself. There are certain complexes where the management really, communicate and engage with the community, and the community have sort of a relationship with them. They're able to voice out their concerns. They are not that afraid of being evicted and all that. But, some don't really have that kind of, relationship, and which really is a thing that we are sort of questioning. You're really putting everyone at the mercy of the management. If they are nice, they are nice. If they're not nice, then it's unfortunate, which something that really need to be re-looked at.
But where will change come from if we want to push for change? Is it going to have to be the federal government? Is it a question of legislation, or do we need a national public housing policy if one does not exist? How would we start that process of changing the dynamics of public housing is more responsive to the people that it purports to serve and allows them to have a say in sustaining and making this a viable project?
Well, I think change should happen in a few levels and a few layers. The most immediate thing that I can think of is actually having a JMB, for example, or something that is like that in the public housing complex where the resident can be more actively part of the management. In terms of who should, which authority should deal with the complexes, I think the closer the people are to the authority, the better, meaning local council, municipalities, where the residents don't have to wait until the ministers to come to see someone, but they can meet someone who has decision-making power within the vicinity of their own neighborhood. And there's also the idea of the view of the relationship between the government and the resident or the citizen at large. You know, we kind of have a sort of a paternalistic government where, you know, they decide on what the citizens should, you know, should have and should or should not, that kind of stuff. So I think that kind of relationship really needs to be questioned. It shouldn't be a one-way relationship. It should be something that, you know, more fluid and more management, you know.
Okay. Can I ask you, because you mentioned about, the giving more autonomy or more control to residents to determine to have more decision-making power over their housing complex. Is that something that we might see more likely, I mean, beyond just having a kind of a joint management body, but rather having or democratizing housing management and giving it more to the residents of the complexes?
I think we should, if we don't have it already, and I don't think we have that level yet. But if I mean, if you're really talking about democracy, we, as citizens, we do need to have some kind of a autonomy and some kind of a say in how we, you know, how we live our lives and you know, run our community. So that sort of power that all citizens should have is something that I think we should, you know, fight for. And it's a right. It's a right for all citizens to have that kind of power.
But do you think at the end of the day we need a better and sustainable model for public housing? Meaning, and I believe, some years ago the Penang State government launched a program of home ownership. Rather than seeing public housing as a temporary shelter, it should be seen as something that people want to buy in, want to invest in the long run, and that would actually improve the building stock. Rather than, kind of create the possibilities of urban slums, I mean, it started off with good intentions, but if you don't create the right models for ownership and management, wouldn't that be do we have a proper model for public housing in this country?
Well, in this country, we don't. And if you want to talk about housing in general, I think we do have to look at housing as a right that all citizens should have. And that's the basic thing that I don't think we really acknowledge it yet. One of the main reasons why we are having these issues is because we are at the mercy of the market. We are at the mercy of the real estate, the property market, because then, you know, the cost of building, the cost of materials, the cost of designing building are all sort of part of that, you know, real estate ecosystem that, of course, regular citizens aren't able to afford, you know, sort of a decent house because it's too expensive and all that. So I think that needs to change to make housing a right so that everybody can, you know, enjoy a decent, and because we're not talking about luxurious living environment. We're just talking about a decent living environment that has very specific things that have been acknowledged by, you know, bodies in international bodies and you know, governments all over the world. So we need to have that kind of basic environment
I
so
mean, sorry,
that
can I just
it will
jump in
spill
and
up.
ask you, do you think the market has failed when it comes to housing in general and public housing in particular? Has the market failed?
I think so. I believe that. And not just in Malaysia, this is a global issue that all cities over the world are really experiencing it, where the market really failed to provide a decent living environment for the citizens.
Can I ask you, in the spirit, the mantra that everyone talks about, the build back better mantra, and if we were to put effort into building this back better, how would you build it back better, Badrul? I mean, particularly public housing in Malaysia, if we were to think about this, how would we do this so it makes a material impact?
Well, I think sort of power distribution is, or decision-making distribution is really important. Having, and I'm not talking about, you know, people who are in charge now have a sort of a malice intention and all that. But the fact we have to acknowledge that not everybody knows everything. So the whole, to sort of circumvent that, then we get everybody involved so that we are everyone is more informed, and the decision that we make are not excluding specific group of people. And that's the best way to start with, by getting everybody involved as equal stakeholders of the country.
Okay, so giving a voice to the people who actually are involved
exactly.
in the matter, the stakeholders. Badra, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been a
thank
pleasure
you.
Talking to you. That was our conversation with Badra Hisham Ismail of Iman Research, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you, a reminder that you can get the latest news on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.